Hi everyone, welcome. My name is Rachel and I work for Torah in Motion, and I'd like to welcome you all to the first class of Life Lessons from Biblical Midrash with Chabanit Dr. Tamara Spitz. It's an absolute pleasure to have you all in this series where we will be exploring the relevance of Midrashic literature in contemporary life. Our speaker for this class is Dr. Tamara Spitz. She is the Rosh Beit Midrash and Mashgicha Ruchanit of Midrashet Torah Ve'Avodah, and lectures on topics in Gemara, including Daf Yomi, Halacha, and Tefillah. Dr. Spitz is also part of the World Mizrahi Speakers Bureau, lectures at Web Yeshiva, and served as the Jewish Studies Principal of one of the main Jewish day schools of Montevideo, Uruguay. On top of all that, Dr. Spitz also runs a chiropractic practice specializing in women's health and Gush Etzion, and is a hip-hop dance teacher. So needless to say, you're in for a treat. I'll post the source for today's class in the chat in a moment, and I'd like to remind you all to please make sure you're muted while you're not sharing. And without further ado, I will leave you to Dr. Spitz. Enjoy.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rachel, for that wonderful introduction. And thank you, everyone who is here for this class. Just a brief introduction on what this class is about. I think that many of us have heard or learned many midrashim, especially when we're dealing with Tanakh, especially Chumash. I think that those of you who grew up in a Jewish day school, I think already from a very young age, were taught many stories that have to do with the Chumash and the Tanakh and famous personalities. And unfortunately, we're not always presented with the distinction between Midrash and Pshat. And what do I mean by that, right? If I ask you, how old was Rivka when she married Yitzchak? Some might suggest, oh, I know that, she was 3 years old. Now, nowhere in the Chumash does it say that Rivka was 3 years old. Excuse me 1 second. Sorry, 1 second. For some reason, I'm choking. Okay. Another example is when we talk about Avraham, we're taught many stories that have to do with Avraham's younger life, how he discovered God, how he destroyed the idols in his father's home, how he was thrown into the fiery furnace. None of those stories appear in the Chumash. And what I'd like to really kind of discuss with you today and throughout this series is why do Chazal write these midrashim? Are they meant to be taken literally? Are they meant to be taken figuratively? What is the purpose of midrash? There's a famous line Chazal say, if you believe that the Midrash is 100% accurate, then you are ignorant. And if you don't believe Midrash, you are also ignorant. So how do we understand Midrash? What place does it hold for us in our lives? And we are going to discover throughout this series different ideas of Midrashim. What are these stories and why Chazal wrote them for us? And what are we meant to take? What life lessons are really there to learn from these Midrashim? So one main explanation for Midrashim is that they fill in the blanks, right? If you actually look at Chumash, we are only introduced to Avraham Avinu at age 75. That's fascinating. What was he doing for 75 years beforehand? It is interesting, and that's not our topic for today, but one could try to think about why does the Chumash not mention anything about Avraham's childhood, adolescence, even adulthood, till age 75. And therefore, one could say that the Midrashim that are written, let's say, about Avraham's childhood, are really about filling in those blanks and giving us some insight into who Avraham really was. Today, we are going to look at a midrash, a few midrashim, and I'm going to share my screen with you now. First of all, in case I didn't mention, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to use the chat box, and I will definitely leave time at the end for questions and comments. I love audience participation, but we do have a lot to do today, so we'll leave it for the end. So today I want to discuss with you the parental relationship between Avraham and Yishmael. It's really Avraham, Sarah, Yishmael, and Yitzhak, but we're at the end, we're going to really focus on Avraham and Yishmael. I think most of us are familiar with the very famous story in Breshit, Perek Kaf Aleph. Sarah is looking out to see, right? Maybe she's doing the dishes and looking out the window, and she's the window of her tent, of course, and she sees the children playing, right? It says, "Vatere Sarah et ben Hagar haMitzrit asher yalda leAvraham mitzachek," and we see that Sarah sees that the son of Hagar, right? She doesn't even, you know, we don't even hear the name Yishmael. It's just the son of, right? The son of Hagar is mitzachek with Avraham. Here, this is the Sepharia translation says playing. We know litzachek has numerous explanations. We are going to discuss what this word means, but we'll call it playing for now, even though that's clearly not the translation that we're going to use. But she sees something happening between her son and Yishmael. What happens? She turns around or runs to Avraham, and she says to him, right, this is it. You need to cast out this slave woman, right, this Amah and her son, and you need to get them out of our house. And not only that, but you should just understand that her son is not going to share an inheritance with Yitzhak, right, with my son, right, ki lo yirash ben ha'amah hazot im bini Yitzhak, right, you need to get rid of Yishmael, and he is not going to inherit you. What happens? Avraham, now we know that Avraham loves both children, but this seems to be extremely difficult for Avraham. It says, right, the Torah tells us, Pasuk Yud Aleph, the matter distressed Avraham greatly, for it concerned a son of his, right? He was very close. Yishmael is his son, and it really disturbed him. However, right, God appears to Avraham and says, do not be distressed over the boy or your slave. Whatever Sarah tells you to do, right, do as she says. I think very important highlight in your Chumash, right? Whatever your wife tells you to do, you need to listen, because she knows something that you're not necessarily seeing. And it is through Yitzhak that offspring shall be continued for you. Meaning, it is the first time that we see, right, we understand this because we've read the Chumash before, but this is the first time we're recognizing that, or at least Avraham is recognizing, only one child can inherit and continue Avraham's legacy, and therefore there needs to be a choice. It's either Yishmael or Yitzhak, and Hashem tells Avraham it's going to be Yitzhak and it is not going to be Yishmael. You need to listen to your wife, because she understands what needs to happen. And then Hashem says, don't worry. As for the son of the slave woman, meaning Yishmael, I will make a nation of him too, for he is your seed. Don't worry, Avraham, says God, I will take care of Yishmael, but you have to understand he needs to leave the house now. Hashem is going to take care of him, and Yitzchak is going to be your inheritor. He is going to inherit your bracha, and the nation is basically going to come from Yitzchak. Okay, what happens now is that the next pasuk says, Vayashkem Avraham baboker, right? Avraham wakes up in the morning and he takes some bread and a skein of water and he gives them to Hagar. He puts them on her shoulder and right together with the child, and he sent her away. And she wanders about in the wilderness of Beersheba. And now I want to discuss some questions that we have. Okay, number one is, what was going on between Yishmael and Yitzchak that was so bad that Sarah felt he needed to be kicked out of the house? It's not just like, go to your room and, you have a punishment, you lose your allowance for a week. This is serious. This is the most serious you could get. What does it mean, mitzachek? What could be so bad that Sarah recognizes that Yishmael needs to leave the house? Number two, what's going on in Avraham's mind? I see in Pasuk Yud Aleph that he's upset, but afterwards, I don't see what's going on in Avraham's mind. All I see is that God tells him to send him away, to listen to his wife, and then I see him wake up in the morning and send them out. And my question is, what's going on in Avraham's mind? And we're going to see that both of these questions are answered by the Mefarshim and the Midrash. So that is what I would like to look at right now. The first thing we're going to look at is the Midrash or the Midrashim about Yishmael and Yitzchak. Right? So if I asked you now, is Yishmael, a good boy, neutral, or a really bad kid, right? I think most of you would answer, oh, bad, right? He was this terrible influence on Yitzchak. But the question was, what was he doing? What's going on? And Breshi Rabbah brings us exactly the question that we asked and wants to understand what's going on here. So the Midrash says, that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, Rabbi Akiva used to interpret this to Yishmael's shame, meaning negative, and I interpret it for praise. And the question is, what is going on here? So let's see. So now we have numerous opinions as to what the word mitzachek means. Rabbi Akiva said, what is mitzachek? And here the Midrash uses the word, right? The translation here is not playing, but making sport. But the question is, what are they doing? So the Gemara, the Midrash says, let's look at other times we have the word mitzachek in the Torah. And Rabbi Akiva says, oh, mitzachek, that means gilui arayot. That is immorality. How do I know that? Because mitzachek means being immoral. And what happens? It means that Sarah saw that Yishmael was acting, right, had, illicit relations with these maidens and seduced, right, married women, and he dishonored them. And therefore, that's the bad thing that she saw Yishmael doing. Okay, Rabbi Yishmael says, the word mitzachek actually is idolatry. because we have another reference where the word mitzachek is used as idolatry. And basically, what is Sarah see Ishmael doing? He's building altars, he's catching locusts and sacrificing them. Again, he's young, he's not killing sheep or goats, but he's taking small insects and he's sacrificing them to idols. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, mitzachek actually means shvichut damim, right? Murder, as we see in Sefer Shmuel, the idea of litzachek means to murder. And therefore, she saw that Ishmael had murderous intentions. So those of you who are sensing a theme, you are correct, right? We just saw three forbidden mitzvot that are very famous, right? We have immorality, we have idolatry, and we have murder. These are the three capital sins that we know that what's called in Hebrew yahareg ve'al ya'avor, right? If someone publicly makes you transgress one of these three things, it is better for you to give up your life than to transgress these three things. So that we understand, wow, that's really bad. And we see how the Midrash is painting this picture of Yishmael being really evil. And that evil influence is something that Sarah wants to get rid of, and doesn't want around her child. Let's continue, though, in the Midrash. Rabbi Azariah says in the name of Rabbi Levi, what really happened? Yishmael said to Yitzchak, let's go and see our portions in the field, right? Let's go to the field. And then Yishmael would take a bow and arrow and he would shoot them in Yitzchak's direction and pretend to play, right? So he would say, Yitzchak, go stand at that tree and put an apple on your head. Hold on, let's play target practice. Right. And we all know that this was not seen as just a game, but really, really a dangerous influence on Yitzchak. And Sarah really was concerned for her son's life. There is another opinion that says, right, really, it wasn't necessarily that he wanted to kill him. Rather, he wanted to fight for his inheritance, which is an explanation for why is Sarah bringing up inheritance, right? She says, I don't want this child right in the house because he's not going to inherit with my son, right? So here it says, right, for when our father Yitzchak was born, right, what's the idea, right? First of all, when Yishmael was born, there was nobody around. Yishmael is the firstborn, and Hagar recognized that he was going to get all of Abraham's inheritance. But now what happens? Yitzchak is born and everybody is goo-goo gaga over this new child. And Yishmael realizes he's going to lose, if not a portion, but maybe even all of his inheritance. So we see, interestingly, the Midrash gives us a wide range of options as to what was the playing or sport that was going on in the house between Yitzchak and Yishmael. So we see that either he's just a regular bad influence or he is an evil influence. Excuse me. But now I want to understand what was going on in Avraham's mind. What is really going on with Avraham in the morning when he wakes up To send off Hagar and Yishmael with this bread and water. And now we're going to see a few different explanations of what is going on, I guess we would say behind the scenes or in Abraham's mind, right? We want to know what is Abraham thinking? What does he feel at this moment? So we're going to start with Shmot Rabbah. Shmot Rabbah explains, right, and Abraham got up in the morning and he took bread and a bottle of water to teach you that he hated Yishmael because of his evil ways. And he sent him and his mother, Hagar, empty-handed and expelled them from his house because of this, right? What happens? We want to understand what emotions is Abraham feeling at this moment. So let's take a step back. The day before, Sarah comes to Abraham and says, you need to banish Yishmael. Abraham says, what are you talking about? Yishmael is my firstborn. He's such a cute boy. He always listens. And Sarah says, Abraham, you have no idea what's going on. Again, maybe he did have an idea, but it seems, at least from this midrash, that Sarah explained to him how bad an influence it really is. And from here, right, even though he's upset, something clicks in Abraham's mind, and now he's upset. And he says, Yishmael, my beloved Yishmael is doing these terrible things. That's it. You're out of here. Not only are you out of here, but I'm giving you, right, next to nothing. Right? What's the Midrash playing on? The fact that Abraham gives them bread and water. So that seems to be very simple food. The other thing that we know from the story, we didn't read it, but if you remember the end of the story, is that they run out of food and they almost die in the desert. So the Midrash seems to be saying Abraham is so upset that he gives them the bare minimum. Right? Meaning it says here empty-handed. He doesn't really send them empty-handed, but the minimal amount that he can give, he gives, and he sends them on their way. Okay, that's option number one. The Radak has another very different explanation to this scene, right? What does it mean when it says that he gave them bread and water, right? He gave her enough food and water to last for a day or two. Why? Right? So again, according to the Midrash Rabbah, he was mad. So he gave her, you know, here's a little bottle of water. Good luck. Have a nice day. Radak says, what are you talking about? She wasn't able to carry more than, right? So let's say he gives her, I don't know, four water bottles, right? How much could he give her, right? She's walking out of his house, right? So here he says, he gives her enough to make sure that she could make it to her relatives, right? So he gave her plentiful supply of water as the distance to Egypt was considerable, right? On the other hand, she might have had relatives closer than Egypt. And not only that, but the Radak says, just because it says he gave her bread and water doesn't mean that that's the only thing he gave her. So the Radak says, no. He also gave her silver and gold so she could buy more supplies when, right, she needed, right? Even though the Torah didn't mention it, that's what he gave. So if I asked you, what is the feeling now of Abraham to Yishmael? It seems, right, there's love, there's care, there's consideration. He knows that he needs to send him away, but it's not a punishment to give her bread and water. He gives what he thinks she can carry. And he also gave gold and silver because he wanted to make sure that she had enough to get to where she was going. Okay, let's go to the Ramban. The Ramban says, right, again, bread and water. So the Ramban says all of this was because Avraham was commanded to do all that Sarah said. And she told him to remove them immediately. And she didn't say to give them silver, gold, servants, and camels to carry everything. And therefore, right, there's almost this tension between Avraham's love for his child and the fact that God says, listen to your wife. And we see that, right now it seems, at least according to the Ramban, that, he on one hand loves his child so much and wants to protect him. On the other hand, he needs to listen to Sarah. So he gives the bare minimum. Okay, let's do the last midrash here, which is Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which we're going to continue with in a minute. But first, let's see how Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the midrash, understands this giving of bread and water. It says, Avraham rose up early and wrote a bill of divorce and gave it to Hagar. And he sent her and her son away from himself, and from Yitzchak, his son, and from this world, and from the world to come. Meaning there's a severing of their relationship. That's what it means that he woke up in the morning. He actually gives a get, which is interesting. That's a new addition to the things that he was given. And then it says that he gave all of these to Hagar, and he took a veil and bound it around her waist so that it would drag behind her to disclose the fact that she was a bondswoman, right? That she is a maidservant, and that people would see that she was a maidservant. Not only this, but also because Avraham desired to see Ishmael, his son, and to see the way whereon they went. And this is a fascinating turn of events. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer adds, not only does Avraham send them on their way, not only does he give a divorce to Hagar, but he ties, let's say, like a rope around her waist that's going to drag behind her. Again, they're in the desert, so it's going to drag behind her. And it's going to show Avraham the way, meaning so that if he wanted to, he could find Hagar and Ishmael in the future. Now, this is fascinating because we haven't seen any interaction after this scene. However, there is one curious scene left in the Chumash that mentions Yishmael, and I think that this midrash and the following midrashim that we're going to read are coming to explain the pasuk. What is the pasuk? Again, we do not see any interaction between Avraham and Yishmael after this. However, we do see a very dramatic scene, and that is at Avraham's funeral. At Avraham's funeral, we have, excellent, I see someone mentioned it in the chat. We have that at the funeral, it says that Ishmael and Yitzchak bury Avraham. And now our big question is, why? Why would Ishmael come to the funeral? Take a step back. How did Ishmael come to the funeral? If there's no interaction, how does Ishmael know that Avraham died? What is he doing at the funeral? Why would he think that he can even show up there? And this is where, again, as I mentioned in the introduction, the Midrash comes to fill in some missing pieces, right? If we were learning Gemara, the Gemara likes to, there's a line in the Gemara that says, Chesuri Mechzera, right? We're missing, there's something chaser. We're missing some pieces in our puzzle. And really here, let's fill in the pieces that are missing. So let's learn the missing pieces. Again, as I mentioned in the introduction, did this really happen or not? We can open that up to a conversation at the end of the class. I would love to hear your thoughts. But let's read this very dramatic midrash of the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. It says, right, again, we left off, right, in our last episode, we see Hagar walking away from Abraham's house. She is, you know, with her son Yishmael, carrying water and bread. There is this rope attached to her that's kind of making a kind of a siman, like a sign in the dirt, to see where she's going. Now, why is that important? Here's our next source, source number 7. After 3 years, and I think that's also very powerful. 3 years later, Avraham went to see Yishmael, his son, having sworn to Sarah that he would not descend from the camel in the place where Yishmael dwelt. Now we can really imagine this conversation. Right. Abraham is sad. He misses his son. He says to Sarah, I need to go see Yishmael. And she's like, no. I don't want you bringing him back here. You're going to see him. You're going to want to bring him back. And then, what happens? He says, no, I promise I'll behave. I just want to see him. I want to see if he's okay. So Sarah says, fine. You can go, but you cannot get off the camel, right? We would say you have to stay in the car. You can roll down the window. We don't do that anymore. You can open the window, but you have to stay. You have to stay in on the camel, right? What is that saying? There needs to be a distance, right? You can go see him, but we need to make sure that there's a distance between you and Yishmael. He says, fine, I'll stay on the camel. Okay. He now goes on the road. He arrived there at midday. What does that tell us? That Yishmael is a half a day camel's ride from Abraham. That's not very far. Which is fascinating to see that it's really so close. We see that, they are, in the desert, and, we see that he gets there, and Yishmael has a wife, and, it seems that, Yishmael is not home, right? He's out with his mother. They're going to get some fruit, and the wife is there. So Abraham says to the wife, can you please give me some bread and a little water? This is meant to remind us of something. And he says, it's been a really long journey. Can you just give me something to drink? And she says, no. We're fresh out of bread and water. We don't have anything like that. So he says, okay, do me a favor. When Yishmael comes home, tell him that I was here. Say that an old man came from the land of Canaan to see you. And I asked for some things and tell him basically what happened. He says, right, tell him that this is not good for you here. He'll understand, right? So when Yishmael came home, his wife told him the story. And the Midrash says, right, the son of a wise man is at least, right, is half a wise man, meaning he understood. He understood what? What did he understand? He understood that it was his father who came to visit him. And he understood that the message was, this is not a good wife for him, right? So his mother sent this woman away and got him a new wife from her father's house, meaning an Egyptian wife, and they got married. Okay, one can end the story here, but Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer continues, right? 3 years later, Avraham goes back, and again, he swears not to get off the camel, and he travels, and he sees his wife, the wife of Yishmael, and he says, where's Yishmael? He's not around, and he says, can you spare a little bread and water, right? It's been a long journey, and this wife, right, fetches the water and the bread and gives it to him, and she gives it to Abraham, and then Abraham gets up and he gives a bracha, right, and he says, may this house, right, the house of Yishmael, be filled with all good things and have many blessings. Excuse me. And when Yishmael comes home, his wife tells him the story. And here the Midrash spells it out. Yishmael knew that his father loved him, and that he had rachamim on him. And again, one could maybe say, and they all lived happily ever after. Meaning, and it's important to understand, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer ends here. That's the end of the story. Meaning, Yishmael understands that Avraham didn't forget about him, is not angry with him, right? He loves him. He cannot have this direct relationship with him, but he loves him and gives him a blessing. And that's maybe why Yishmael comes back for Avraham's funeral. That's one end of the story. Those of you who like, I would say, things that end a little ambiguously, so you like this end. I happen to like happily ever after stories. So for me, there's another midrash. I'm not making them up. There's another midrash from the Sefer HaYashar, and he finishes the story for us in a different way. He says that Mamash, picking up from where we left off, right, Yishmael hears the account of the wife, and Yishmael, right, and at that time, Yishmael took his wife and his children and his cattle and all that belonged to him and went forth into the land of the Philistines to his father Avraham. And Avraham related unto his son all concerning the treatment he received of, right, what happened with Yishmael's first wife. And Yishmael and his children, right, stayed with Avraham for many days in the land, right, in Eretz Yisrael. And I think that it's a beautiful image of Avraham and Yishmael. Again, at this point, Yishmael is an adult. He has a family. And I guess the idea here is he is no longer, one maybe would say, maybe not a bad influence anymore, and he moves back in with Abraham, Sarah, and Yitzchak. And I think it's a fascinating discussion as to what is going on here. I see someone is mentioning the idea of Sarah, and that really is an excellent question, right? Meaning, do we see Sarah as being extremely harsh? Do we see her as doing the right thing? Don't forget that Sarah really, right? Hashem says, listen to Sarah. So it's not that this is arbitrary, but rather it seems that she has Ruach HaKodesh, or a motherly instinct. And I'd like to discuss this a little bit. And I really want to bring it into modern life. I think that it's really important to try to think about what is that parent-child relationship, especially when the child or the parent are not, one could say, are not upholding the values of, right, let's talk about, let's say the child is not upholding the values of the home, of the family's home. What is the response? You know, I'd like to share a few ideas with you. One is, I know from when I was growing up, there was this concept that if a child did something that the parents saw as terrible, again, one could fill in the blank of what that was. There was this concept of the parent disowning the child. Chas v'shalom, I don't want to say chas v'shalom, everyone should do what they do, but there are definitely stories of parents sitting shiva for their child, where they said, this child is no longer upholding our values. And that's it. It's interesting, actually, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg wrote an article, a blog. He writes a weekly blog. And last week, I think, he actually wrote about this idea that there was some New York Times article about a woman who wrote in her will that if the her children marry Jewish, she was a Jew, if her children marry a Jewish person, so then they will inherit her. And if they don't, they're cut out of the will. And there was a discussion, is this ethical or not? And I'm not coming to discuss if it's ethical or not, but I would like to share another idea. My husband and I did shlichut in South America a number of years ago. My husband was the chief rabbi in of Uruguay. We lived in Montevideo, and as in many small Jewish communities, many people were not necessarily connected to their Jewish community. And unfortunately, many people intermarried, and whether or not there was a response, it definitely we heard of so many stories where the parents said, look, this is not our value, and we really don't agree with your choice. However, we love you, and you are always a part of our family. And therefore, we would like to make a deal with you. Every Friday night, you come to our house for Friday night dinner. And this is something that they did year in and year out. And the idea was that there was always a connection between the parents and the children. And so much so that we actually saw that maybe it wasn't the children, but the grandchildren, right? When they would go to their grandparents' house, every Friday night, they would say, what's grandma doing, right? Why is she lighting Shabbos candles? Why are they making kiddush? What is this? And we really saw an incredible thing, which was, these kids felt connected to Judaism in a way that they never would have felt connected to if they would have been dismissed and banished from the house. And I really believe that that is the message of this midrash. Again, it's midrash. It's not the pshat. The text of the Chumash is Abraham listens to his wife, he listens to God, and he does send them out of his house, and it seems like he never sees them again. And it could be that that's what happened because that's what needed to happen. But I think that the Midrash is giving us a different perspective. And I think that perspective is the unconditional love between a parent and a child. And I think the Midrash is trying to say, even if Yishmael couldn't be in the house, there needed to be a connection. Abraham needed, even if he was mad, angry, disappointed, fill in the blank with all those emotions. I think the Midrash is trying to say to us, there needs to be a connection. Again, we can look at the Midrash in two ways. It could be that there needs to be maybe an indirect connection. Again, according to Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, there isn't any meeting between Yishmael and Avraham, right? One could say he sent him an email. He sent a package, right? He, you know, sent him something from Amazon once a year for his birthday. It could be that. If you continue to the next midrash, it actually was a reconciliation, right? Where Yishmael recognizes, wait a minute, what were the values of my home, right? Again, we didn't discuss this, but I kind of signaled, right? The fact that Avraham is asking for bread and water, right? What's he saying? He's saying, Yishmael, don't you remember that there were values in my house? The idea of hachnasat orchim that we allow, right? Anybody who's walking through the desert, who comes by, right, should be welcomed. Avraham is saying, Yishmael, where are those values? What happened, right? And Yishmael realizes, you're right. I had that value. Where did it go? And I think really, that is the message that I think that the Midrash is trying to give us. I think the idea, and again, I think we see it from both perspectives. One perspective is Avraham's perspective, which is that love, that unconditional love. I need to see my child, even though I'm not supposed to. But I think also from the other side, from the side of the child, right? For the child to recognize, wait a minute, what were the values that I could take into my life, right, into my new life? Wow, right, Yishmael says, I really see that that my father loves me, right? And that's a very powerful message, right? Even though at the end, he is, right, he was pushed away. There seems to be this reconciliation, again, either in person or not, where there is that love between them. And what that looks like, again, in the pshat, in the chumash, is the funeral, right? The funeral is, right, we see that Yishmael is present. And I think that that really is the testament to the fact that there is some sort of understanding. Again, that understanding, could it be that there was never any contact and Yishmael says, look, Avraham did what he needed to do. Or maybe it is that there really is a reconciliation. So I leave that for you to think about. I would love to hear some thoughts, questions, comments. I really think that there's really so much to be learned from the pshat, but also from the midrash. So if anyone would like to share some thoughts, you can unmute yourself, and I would love to hear your perspective.
Two things. One, in Babylonia, there are records in cuneiform of basically surrogacy contracts where, you know, somebody's wife doesn't have a kid, so they take somebody like that and this will become my heir. But usually in it, there was a thing saying if for some reason I get a legitimate or an heir from the primary wife, then, you know, you're not the heir anymore. So that could be going on. And the second is that God could just be saying, not that Sarah is right, but that you listened to Sarah and you took Hagar in and you had a kid from her and it's your mess now. So you better listen to her again.
Interesting. So definitely on the first case that you mentioned, I'm not sure if that was the case, because we know that Avraham treats Yishmael, right, as really as his legitimate son. So much so, right, that the Mefarshim say, why does Hashem have to say, for the Akedah, kach et bincha, yichidcha, right? Meaning, why does Hashem have to be so specific? Because Avraham does have that love for Yishmael, but I think that's an excellent point. And interesting, the second point, again, I don't feel, I'm not sure, I don't feel that God is saying, like, this is your mess, so you figure it out. I feel that he's saying, really, Sarah sees something that you don't see. And I think that we see this throughout the Chumash, right? We have Rivka and Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esav. We see that there are, right, sensitivities that the mothers, that the women are seeing, are aware of. And sometimes the fathers are blinded, literally or figuratively, when it comes to their children. And I really see it as Hashem saying, Sarah sees something that you're not catching and you need to listen to her. So that's the way I see it. Okay, excellent. Any other ideas?
It says that when Abraham died, Yitzchak and Ishmael buried him. So I think it implies that Ishmael acknowledged that Yitzchak was the primary son and was willing to be second fiddle and accept his position. And that's kind of how they made peace with each other.
Right. I agree. It is fascinating that, again, like to be at that scene, to be at that funeral, must have been something, right? What's going on? What's the conversation? I think definitely. And again, Yishmael, becomes a great nation. So I don't think that he feels, you know, that he needed the inheritance from Abraham. There seems to be, very, I don't want to say happy reunion, but we don't see any bloodshed or any conflict. So it does seem that they have made peace between themselves. Yes.
Isn't there a midrash that actually Ishmael made shuva?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. That's the midrash that brings him back to the funeral, right? So there's, again, we read a very, dramatic midrash about how he gets back to the funeral. A shorter midrash is, right, the question is, why is Ishmael at the funeral? The midrash says, because Ishmael does tshuva, right? And he comes back, again, comes back literally and figuratively. The midrash that I brought for you is a little bit more dramatic. Why does he do tshuva? How did he do tshuva? Where did it come from? And therefore, I brought you that midrash. But yes, exactly. That is the midrash that says he does tshuva.
I felt always uncomfortable when he sent her away without really somebody to go with her, without enough food and water, to the extent that he did get lost. Somehow Abraham, who is the one who gives food for everybody who passes by, he just sends her away, go Chaim Ushulam.
Exactly. I think it is a very challenging scene. It's very sad. I think that there are again, a lot of lessons to be learned. I do think that the Midrash is critical of Avraham, again, depending on what Perush you read, I'm not being critical, but one could say Avraham didn't send enough. One could say, why didn't he show her the way? Why didn't he send her with more things? So one could be critical. Again, other Mefarshim say he gave her enough and she got lost, right? She knew the way, but people get lost and it wasn't his fault. I think, it's true. I think there are a lot of emotions when we read this story. And it is very, again, Hashem comes, Hashem saves them, Hashem hears their cries. It is a very powerful story. So I think that it really is, again, one could read it in many different ways. One could say, again, and I think that the Midrash is a little critical of the raising of Ishmael. How does Ishmael get to this point that he needs to be kicked out, right? That he is behaving in this way. And I think that that's an interesting, question of, what was going on in the house that Yishmael ended up one way and Yitzchak ended up another way, right? One explanation is, we have a very famous line in the Gemara, right, that every child needs to be raised in the way that they are taught in the way that they learn, right? You can't have a cookie cutter way that you teach or that you raise children because everybody is different. Maybe Avraham learned it the hard way. I'm not sure.
Yaakov and Esav.
Exactly. Yaakov and Esav. Is it nature? Is it nurture? It's an excellent question. We're going to talk a little bit more about nature and nurture in the next class. I think it's all important thoughts to think about in terms of our own relationships, right? Our parents, our children, and the relationships that we have, and the values that we've learned and the values that we want to pass down.
There was definite connection and communication between Yitzchak and Hagar. We know that she was in a place, Laber Ber Lachai Roi, and we know that Yitzchak went to visit a few times to the place. In fact, when Rivka came to the scene with Eliezer, it's written that Yitzchak is coming from Be'er Lachai Roi. So maybe Yitzchak went there to make back the shidduch or whatever it is, but definitely from the pshat itself, without going to a midrash, there was definitely a communication between Yitzchak and Hagar.
I think there's a word play there that alludes to what Chaim has just said, namely Yitzchak went lasuach basadeh, and lasuach is an allusion to the Sevach, which was where the Ayo was captured instead of Abraham, instead of Yitzchak. Abraham sacrificed an Ayo. Maybe that Ayo was not just a four-legged animal, but Yishmael.
Wow. Wow. That is beautiful. And you're saying maybe he went to visit him and there's a relationship that continues later on, even after, right? That scene is after Sarah has died and Abraham has died. It's fascinating.
Yeah, this is a suggestion that I've actually made in my book, Legal Friction, which if you get the book, you'll see that I mentioned this.
Okay, beautiful. I love the play of words on Siach and Lasuach, right? The Gemara takes it to Tfilah, right? Lasuach Basadeh is Sicha. But I love that idea of maybe it is Yishmael.
The Muslims claim that Yishmael was the Korban in the Akedah. And this is, if you like, a biblical support for the Muslim Midrash on our Akedah.
Wow. Okay. Very fascinating. Fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing.
Another reference to Yishmael in the Lasuach Basadeh on the same idea. Ooh. When Hagar and Yishmael are lost or wandering, and she puts him under Tachat Echad HaSichim. Right. And that Siach is the same, and that's actually the same word. It's not a different spelling. And then the Lasuach and the Sichim that Yishmael was under, that's another nice connection too.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That's where I thought you were going. That's what I thought you were going to say. But beautiful. I love it. That is a really beautiful idea. Okay.
Yes, can I say something?
Sure.
My name is Helen.
Sure.
Okay, we know the name of Yishmael is a beautiful name, and he keeps that name through his life, is one point. That's a shvach for him.
The other point, Hagar was very disrespectful to Sarah. So if he was under the tutelage of his mother, who was a disrespectful woman, what can you expect from his behavior? And we have to have a little reflection on him about the apple doesn't fall far from the tree if he's being parented very poorly.
Excellent.
But it's a very sad story. The midrashim,
it is
hard to forgive Sarah or Abraham.
Yes. So I'll just mention that the midrash picks up on exactly what you just mentioned, and says, right, how complicated must Yishmael, Yishmael's personality be, because, the Midrash works on the word that it says that Yishmael is a para adam, and we translate it as a wild man, or wild person. But the Midrash actually says that he has two, figures, right? Two parents who are very different. And exactly as you said, right, you have Abraham, who's a paradigm of ethics and morality, and you have Hagar, who is the opposite, right? The Midrash definitely sees her as a negative influence, especially being from Egypt. Therefore, the Midrash says that he is confused, like poor Yishmael, because he has these two different influences in his childhood, in his nurturing, right? And what is he, did he even have a chance because he was raised by two very different people? So it is a good question. Again, I think the Midrash wants to say that in the end, he does do tshuva, he does come back. And I think that the ethics and morality of his father, I think, does win out in the end. But he is definitely a complicated character. And I agree, it's a very, sad story, however you look at it. I think for all the characters involved,
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What I find really, really puzzling is how Hagar was able to leave Ishmael alone. And she went, this is what I don't know. Could you just speak to that? Because I just don't understand it. I can't.
We didn't read through those psukim, but it's a very dramatic, very, I would say, terrible. It's a very terrible scene because, we have the scene of Yishmael about to die and Hagar can't take it anymore. So she puts him down and walks away. Again, I think it's two different ways to grieve. I think that, what we would, maybe it's modern sensitivities, but I think we would say one would want to be with one's child, till the very end through, even though it's so torturous and painful, one would want to be there. I think the way the pshat is written is you can look at it in two ways. One is callousness. He's going to die anyway. I can't be here. Another is, so much emotion that she can't handle it. And she has to walk away. So I think that one could look at it in either way. Again, Midrash tends to paint Hagar in an evil way. So again, one could see it as callousness. But I think that mothers, I think a mother's love, I would see it as overwrought with emotion, so that she couldn't even handle it, and needed to walk away.
Okay. Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
This was really wonderful and, looking forward to continuing our learning next week and, wishing everyone a Shabbat Shalom, and see you next week. Thank you.